Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
People are poor, which is, this is the more liberal response or neoliberal response. People are poor because they're simply not educated. And if people could go back to school, then those individuals would no longer be poor. But unfortunately, what that narrative does is it really doesn't address the structural reasons of why poverty exists. Because even if a few individuals went back to school or were even had that option and could become engineers, there aren't enough positions for everyone to be engineers. They're still going to need to be domestic workers, construction workers, restaurant workers. And why isn't our question about how to make those jobs good living wage jobs, dignified jobs, instead of just trying to get people out of those jobs? Because those jobs will always need to be filled.
That's the voice of Christina Singh-Soon, Executive Director of the Workers' Defense Project. On this week's show, we speak to Christina against the labor movement's history of resistance against poverty and inequality, some of the ongoing struggles to assert the right to safety and fair wages for workers in the state of Texas and related struggles across the country and continent. So stay tuned.
Someone who is working effectively and has made a huge contribution to the plight of workers is my next guest. Christina Singh-Soon is the executive director of Workers Defense Project, the Proyecto Defensa Laboral. And as the daughter of a Mexican immigrant and a granddaughter of a bracero, who's a guest worker program in the U.S. that existed from 1942 to 1964, she knows firsthand the struggles of poor immigrant families and has dedicated herself to building a more racially just and equitable society. She has been recognized by labor councils throughout Latin America. She's also been a contributor to several academic endeavors and has been published Yes Means Yes, Visions of Female Sexual Power and a World Without Rape. She also, The Women's Movement Today, an Encyclopedia of Third Wave Feminism. We're very privileged to have her on our program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You know, when we look at the stories of workers and how we are shaped by the struggles that people have simply to just to exist, you know, it seems the struggle today is just to be able to put food on the table. I wonder if you could talk about how you got started, the work of your organization, how this began, what was the catalyst that brought you together?
Sure. So my organization, Workers Defense Project, is a statewide organization in Texas. We are a worker center like many other organizations that have formed across the country, and we consider ourselves part of the labor movement, though we are not a labor union. We really see ourselves as lending ourselves to build a stronger labor movement to really lift up the voice of working people and also to make structural change that allow people to be exploited, that allow workers to not have to have such a power imbalance with their own employers and within our society. So our organization started in 2002, like many worker centers, helping particularly immigrant workers, workers that were undocumented, Latino workers, who were not paid for their work. So being denied minimum wage, overtime, or not being paid at all, which was incredibly common because of workers' immigration status, and employers believing that they could take advantage of those workers more so than other workers because of their immigration status. And so our organization began in response to help workers recover their wages, but has really moved beyond that, understanding that wage recovery is important. And like many other worker centers, we do that, but also understanding that for workers to have a voice and build power, that we need to go beyond what the state already grants workers, such as the right to minimum wage and overtime, but that we need to raise the bar and standards, particularly in a state like Texas, that's a right-to-work state that has really undermined the rights of workers. So while our state's economy is growing, unlike many other states during this recession, the jobs we're gaining in this state are low-wage, dangerous occupations that continue to allow for an increase in poverty, an increase in inequality, and that not everyone is gaining from the economic growth in our state in the same way. So that is how our organization began. And I started in the organization like everyone else in our organization that's on staff as a volunteer, people that were committed to the work and wanted to see structural change in the workplace and for working families in a state that traditionally hadn't done so.
You know, when we think about the changes that the state has undergone, a lot of people celebrated the election of Barack Obama as the epoch of change, you know, where we were going to see fair practices being put in place when in relation to migrant workers, in relation to African Americans who have been predominantly discriminated in terms of economic opportunities, educational opportunities, health access, all of the essentials that we all deserve and need to have a life, right? A healthy life. So can you talk a little bit about the struggles that you're facing in particular within the state of Texas, where we've seen legislation being put forth to further discriminate and alienate migrant workers, but also citizens, people who are born in the state who happen to be non-white?
So, you know, it's interesting. I've been with the organization since 2003. So, you know, there was a broad coalition of folks that put Obama in office, including Black workers, Latino workers, and white folks, and also the labor movement that put in a huge amount of economic and people resources to get Obama elected, hoping that with the control of the presidency, the Senate, and the House, that they would be able to see the passage of stronger worker protections that would further workers' ability to organize across the country. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. But also, since I've been with the organization for so long, I remember working with the Department of Labor under the Bush administration, and that literally workers would call the Department of Labor asking for help, and they would send them to our organization because they didn't seem to have the will to actually investigate cases, and they wouldn't work with us at all. So we have seen a shift in the Department of Labor since Obama was elected. The new leadership of the Department of Labor really does care about workers and does care about enforcing the laws, but unfortunately the laws that we have are antiquated and don't do enough to actually protect workers. So in Texas, you know, as I stated, we're a right-to-work state. Only 6% of the workforce is actually represented by a union. And I work mostly with construction workers. In other parts of the country, the construction industry has been really decimated, but you've also seen construction workers have higher wages, have higher standards because of unions. But in Austin, where, you know, our office is located, we're the second fastest growing city in the country. So we have tons of housing starts, tons of economic development, tons of growth. Yet, while the industry has been growing, wages have been staying stagnant. In fact, more workers have, full-time construction workers have gone into poverty over the last few years as the industry has started to grow even more than we saw several years ago. It's also the industry with the highest concentration of immigrant workforce. So in Austin, it's estimated that about 70% of the workforce is foreign-born. That's a huge percentage, and almost the majority are going to be undocumented. So while that's the vast majority of the workforce, the few building trade unions that we do have up until recently had no immigrant members, and in fact had internal policies and prejudices that undermine their ability to organize the workforce. So in effect, even though we have so many workers in the industry and so many workers joining the economy, that their conditions are actually worse than they've ever been. So Texas is the most deadly place for construction workers to work in the country, far surpassing any state. So every 2.5 days, a construction worker dies in Texas. And we're the only state that doesn't require workers' compensation coverage if a worker is injured. So many of the workers that come to our organization are seriously injured on the job, require hospitalization, and then have little to no recourse to help them with their injuries and the costs, the mounting medical costs that they have from those injuries. It's also interesting because when immigrant workers come to our organization, most from Latin America, they're surprised to learn actually how few rights workers have in this country. I think in the U.S. we like to think of ourselves as the most free nation, the nation that will protect its citizens and residents more so than other countries. But the reality is that in places like Mexico and in Nicaragua, workers have more rights than we do in this country. So, for instance, in Nicaragua, workers have the right to a month of paid vacation, paid maternity leave, and stronger protections for them to organize into unions, and the same goes for Mexico as well. So I think it's important that workers in this country understand that we don't actually have as strong rights, and particularly in right-to-work states like the states I'm in, that without unions and without strong representation and organizing of all workers, that really all of our rights are undermined. So in Texas, for instance, we don't even have the right to paid rest breaks either, or rest breaks, period. So we have workers that consistently die, particularly in the summer here in Texas, from heat exhaustion, something that's totally preventable. But because of the weak place of unions and workers and the power imbalance they have with employers and business interests, really all workers, citizens, non-citizens, are suffering from these conditions.
You know, add to this the gasoline of trade agreements like the NAFTA and the kinds of imposed deregulation that has come out of it. Can you talk about the implications for workers who are without benefits, for instance, health, housing? Can you talk about some of the barriers you're facing for the workers in that region?
I think there's several barriers that workers face. You know, one is the fact that we have just in general an incredibly weak labor movement in this country at this point that also hasn't recognized the organizing potential at times of right-to-work states, seeing them as too challenging or too difficult to organize within. Yet those are the states that are growing and are actually ripe at times for organizing, particularly like in Texas, as I mentioned, with the construction industry. So I think that the largest challenge is not having more unions on the ground that can support the organizing campaigns to improve working conditions. And also just some of the challenges, you know, to address structural inequality. And I don't mean just winning people better working conditions, but really looking at how our economy is structured so that workers can live more equitably, can address some of their needs, but also think long-term about what kind of economic system actually supports people and our planet. It's also interesting to me, after working in the organization for quite a while, is, you know, one of the questions we ask people whenever they interview for a job or an internship with our organization is, you ask people, why does poverty exist? That's what we ask. And it seems like a pretty easy question, but most people have never actually thought about it. And so you get kind of two standard responses. One, people are poor because they're lazy. And that's a less common response. But then the other response is, people are poor, which is, this is the more liberal response or neoliberal response. People are poor because they're simply not educated. And if people could go back to school, then those individuals would no longer be poor. But unfortunately, what that narrative does is it really doesn't address the structural reasons of why poverty exists. Because even if a few individuals went back to school or were even had that option and could become engineers, there aren't enough positions for everyone to be engineers. They're still going to need to be domestic workers, construction workers, restaurant workers. And why isn't our question about how to make those jobs good living wage jobs, dignified jobs, instead of just trying to get people out of those jobs? Because those jobs will always need to be filled. And I think if we also look at how policy is formed in this country, there's been the few policy protections we do have for workers in this country have really excluded whole classes of workers. So if there's a great book, if anyone's not read it, which is called When Affirmative Action Was White, which just really looks at when advancements were made for working people in this country and how certain groups of workers were excluded from being part of those advancements. So when the National Labor Relations Act was passed, which protects workers' rights to organize, over the Fair Labor Standards Act, it protects minimum wage and overtime for workers, it excluded domestic workers and farm workers. Now, if you go back and read the congressional and Senate debates at that time, you'll see that the reason it excluded those workers is because there was a real concern about black workers gaining access to the same rights that white workers had. And so instead of just saying black workers wouldn't have those rights, they excluded these whole classes of workers in certain industries when 70% of the workforce at that time that was black worked in those industries. And you see that carry on over today, where the vast majority, for instance, of farm workers in this country are Latino immigrants. So they're now excluded from a lot of those labor protections that were a holdover of segregation and slavery in this country and not wanting black workers to have the same rights. And we see that with current labor law today with workers' rights to organize and exclusion of undocumented workers, for instance, for the same rights that other workers have. So we face those same challenges based on race, based on immigration status, though we don't say in this country that they're based on those things anymore. We claim that they're based on other reasons. But that systemic discrimination still exists, and that's what we face in a place like Texas that's very conservative, very anti-worker, and also anti-immigrant.
You know, we're talking about what goes unsaid, what gets, you know, silenced, right, in a narrative that pits us in a social evolution where we're, you know, multicultural, colorblind, and yet those structures of inequality, be it, you know, patriarchy, be it colonization, be it racism, are still there, you know, shaping the way we see the world. I want to ask you about the role then of communities in society, because we recognize that the labor movement has a slight myopic view in terms of how to get involved and recognizing the opportunities present in right-to-work states. But what about the public? What are the victories we have had? What are the struggles we ought to be taking notice of and participating in right now?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, I do think that it's also important to me to have a strong left in this country, that the labor movement plays probably the most critical role in making a strong left, and it's done so in every other country in the world. So I think it's important to, for us on the left and as progressives to really acknowledge the role labor plays and wherever we can become involved with the different labor struggles that exist. That also doesn't mean that just has to be with unions. It can also be with other organizations and movements. You know, I think that the movements we saw in Wisconsin are particularly inspiring. I think that it really woke up the labor movement and shook up the labor movement as well, which is critical and important. Also, because if you look again at the rollback on the rights of workers in places like Wisconsin and Ohio, where I'm originally from, you see that it's about really undercutting public sector workers. And if you actually, you know, I've spent time on YouTube uncovering some of these more right-wing Tea Party videos that really talk about why it's necessary to undercut the rights of public sector workers because supposedly they're too privileged, they're lazy, they don't really deserve those rights and those conditions, instead of saying that everyone deserves them. But there's a huge discourse around those more right-wing groups, actually, about how many African-American workers work in the public sector. So it's actually the largest ethnic and racial group of any in the United States works in the public sector are black workers. So 1 in 5 black workers that are working in this country work in the public sector. So it's also about rolling back the rights of the civil rights movement and the gains that the civil rights movement won for workers to get those good jobs. I mean, we need to remember that Martin Luther King Jr. was murdered in Tennessee when he was advocating for the rights of sanitary workers. And the immigrants' rights movement today is part of that struggle. So in places like Georgia, Alabama, Arizona, where you've seen a very anti-immigrant legislation proposed, you've also seen it in right-to-work states where the labor movement is weaker and where blacks and Latinos aren't necessarily working together to challenge these laws and see it as racism affecting both groups. And I just wanted to bring up really quickly the group, the Mississippi Immigrant Rights Alliance. So they were formed actually out of a labor struggle in the late 90s, trying to organize workers. And a lot of the workers in the industries they were working in were actually Latino workers, and so these were new workers. And instead of seeing them as a threat, those unions that represented a huge percentage of African-American workers really took the time to meet those workers, organize those workers, and bring them into their union. And then from there, they formed the Mississippi Immigrant Rights Alliance. And though we've heard about anti-immigrant bills in Alabama and Arizona and Georgia, vehemently anti-immigrant, you haven't heard about that in Mississippi, that's also a very conservative state, because the Mississippi Immigrant Rights Alliance took time to build coalitions with the Black Democratic Caucus, for instance, in the legislature in Mississippi that has fought every anti-immigrant bill. And that if we could build coalitions like that in other parts of the country, that we would really be able to build a broader movement. Now, that's not traditionally a traditional labor movement, but that was an extension of an organization and unions coming together, building a broader vision of what economic and racial justice is. And they've been able to stop so many anti-immigrant, anti-worker bills in the state of Mississippi, which I think is a tremendous example for the rest of the country.
I think that it's important that we also not only acknowledge the struggles and barriers we face, and as you point out, you know, that the huge role that the labor movement has played, we are self-critical because we want to be better, right? It's not about, right, you know, dismissing what we have done. But also, I think we need to realize that there are struggles that are taking place today. I wonder if we're coming to the end of our interview, and I wonder if you could talk about the urgent struggles that are taking place in Texas right now. I know that in a state like Texas, we've heard of the people being detained in, you know, open prisons now, you know, the huge attacks on migrant people. I wonder if you could talk about the relationship between immigration policies and the undermining of rights of workers that's taking place in that state.
Sure. I think there are several ways that's happening, and I think there's immigration enforcement that goes hand-in-hand with police enforcement, and we've seen programs like Secure Communities that have been established, and, you know, under Secure Communities, it's a program that allows immigration and local law enforcement to work together and allows people to be deported for things like for small misdemeanor offenses or driving without a license, which if you're undocumented, you can't have a license. So in Travis County, where I work, we have seen more immigrants than of any county be deported for misdemeanor offenses. And it's had a tremendous impact on our work with the police. So, for instance, before, we used to work with the police more actually to help us with our protests, to help us when workers weren't paid and if they were threatened with violence by their employers. And since we've seen local law enforcement work more closely with immigration, there's been a real fear of workers to reach out to police or have them in their communities, and that really undermines their rights in the workplace. We've also seen raids happen in certain industries with high levels of immigrant workforce in other parts of the state. And also the rollback of the rights of U.S. citizens as well as an excuse about undocumented immigrants. So, for instance, in Texas, as in many other states, we are now passing many laws that that really try and prohibit voter registration and low-income and people of color voting under the guise that there are so many undocumented immigrants voting that these laws and rules need to be implemented. And what that does is really it's a plan about not voting in more progressive leadership to address the issues that working people face. And until we can stop immigration and law enforcement working together, we are going to continue to see immigrant workers fear protesting and fear equal protection. Now, our members are still willing to go out and protest, but the reality is that there are people that are afraid and don't feel comfortable really raising the voice and raising the concerns about the issues that they're facing. And we've even known in certain instances for employers to call local law enforcement and threaten immigration anytime an undocumented worker really raises voice or concerns about treatment in the workplace. And so that's really undermining everyone's rights, those collaborations that we're seeing more and more in places like Texas, but also everywhere in this country.
Thank you so much for being with us. My guest is Christina Sinson, and she's the Executive Director of Workers' Defense Project. Tell our audience how they can support your efforts and connect to the different struggles that your organization is engaged in today.
Sure. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to share our work and talk about our work in Texas. And if people are interested in learning more, they can go to workersdefense.org, or they can follow us on Facebook or Twitter as well.
Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. That was Christina Sinson. And for more information, please visit their website. We will also be posting their website on latinwavesmedia.com.
And before I depart today, I'd like to give a warm welcome to Local 107.3 FM from St. John, New Brunswick, and CFRU from Guelph, Ontario, that are now participating in Caring Latin Waves. We much appreciate it, and I encourage listeners to go to their website. I put some links up on www.latinwavesmedia.com. You can link through and listen to those stations online, as they're awesome community members and are broadcasting information, news, and ideas that you won't hear anywhere else. So welcome aboard, and so long for now. We'll see you next time. We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.